Daf Ayin Tes Samed Aleph, about 10 lines down from the top. What's the din in a case of a renter who rents a donkey and it dies middle of the way? Omar Rabba Barafuna Marav Hasocher Sachamar Lirkov Oleha. The renter agreed to pay a certain rental fee in order to get his wares on the back of the chamor from place X until place Y. He has a destination. Now that the chamor died in the middle of the way, the socher, the renter, is stuck halfway. He didn't reach his destination. Nevertheless, Rabbi Bar Rav Huna says, no sein lo schoro shel chatzi aderech. He has to pay him half of the schirus for half of the derech. The Ainlo Olav Elitaromos. And he may have a little bit of a gripe against the maskir because he didn't really get to his destination. And apparently the chamar that died halfway was not as strong and as healthy as he should have been, given the fact that they had stipulated that the chamar was being rented to arrive at a destination which was a certain distance, and you would require for that distance a chamar that's healthy. So therefore the socher, the renter, has a taromus against the maskir. So the Gemara is not sure about what's going on here. And there's a sort of a mimonafshach, hechi domi. What's the case? What does it mean that he, the socher, has no monetary claim? He has to cough up half of the rental agreement, and all he has is taromus. If at that point that they got to halfway to the destination, it's shchichi laagure, he can find another replacement chamar by going to the nearest rental station over there. Is taromas my avinite? What does he have to lose, the socher, by renting a replacement chamar right there in the place where he got stuck? And why should he have any complaints against the maskir? Even though, again, it requires a certain amount of energy and effort on the part of the socher to find a replacement chamar, but nevertheless, there's no taromas here because it wasn't any deliberate act on the part of the maskir that caused the death of the animal. The animal died. That was unpredictable. That's already begetter onus. Again, early on Daf Ayin Vav Amid Beis, we spoke about Poalim, and Tosus there was of the opinion that if the Baal Bayis wants to fire them midday, there is taromas on the fact that now they have to hire themselves out to somebody else. That's why, the reason for that of taromus is because the Baal Bayis, the employer, had no justification, no logical reason why he would fire them before they finish the day or finish the job. Here, the maskir has no element of negligence. It wasn't that he fired anybody. He didn't kill the chamor. He didn't anticipate that the chamor would die. So where's the taromus here? Let the socher, the renter in this case, do the tircha, invest the energy, and replace the chamor with another chamor. But if on the other hand, he did lo shchichi lagure, if he got stuck halfway when the chamor died, and there's no one there, there's no rental station, he has no access to replace this chamor with another one, is agra boy lemesiv la? The Gemara asks with a question mark, should the socher in this case have to pay rental fees that got him halfway? What good is getting there halfway? He has to get to a certain destination. He can't get there because there's no chamor rental station here midway. He's stuck in the middle way. Maybe he should even sue the maskir for damages because as a result of this rental agreement, the socher is stuck halfway. He has no way of getting back, neither forward nor backwards. So mimonafshach, we don't understand the statement of Rabbi Bar Rav Huna. So the Gemara answers the following. Li'olam delo shchiach lagur. You're right. The statement here of Rabbi Bar Rav Huna addresses a case where he will not be able to replace this chamor with a local, there's no accessible rental station, but nevertheless, he still, the socher has to pay for half the way. Why? Mishum di omale, the maskir could claim to the socher, ilu bois lemese ad hocha, supposing you would have set your goal, your objective to reach this destination halfway instead of the full way. Lav agra bois lemesiv, would you not have to pay me rental fees to get to this particular spot? And here Tosus asks the obvious question. If the socher rented this chamor to reach at a certain destination, the full way, and that's where he's going to take his wares, his merchandise, and sell them, what good is it to reach half the way? Why would he have paid anyone else for half the derech? And Tosus says that even though there's no way that the socher can find a replacement chamor, nevertheless, in Tosus's first answer at least, he says that Ein liskar shav emtzadech b'mechir, he cannot replace the chamor with this by paying the same exact rental fee or proportionally. But if he jacks up the price and he's willing to pay a higher price than the going rate over there in that particular place, he can find a replacement chamor, and therefore the distance from where the animal died halfway until the destination point is certainly going to be less than what he would have to pay. He certainly benefited from the fact that at least he reached halfway. And therefore, since he benefited in some sense from reaching halfway, he's now going to have to pay a little bit of an exorbitant price to get the rest of the way, but he definitely benefited. You know, sometimes you get to a place with a cab and the cab lets you off, you're going to have to pay a little bit more, or maybe even a lot more, to get where you have to get to, but at least you pay less because of the mileage that you've already made with the first cab. But the second Teretz Tosus is even more interesting. Tosus says, so it's not like he's stranded midway, be'emtza derech, in such a way that he cannot sell his merchandise. There are buyers over there, although many of the buyers and perhaps the larger group of sochrim he could find in the ultimate destination, but even b'emtza derech he can make a certain profit. There are sochrim that really come to that point, and that's also a local market, albeit a smaller market, and his intention was to arrive at the ultimate destination where there's a larger market and his profit margin is much expanded. But nevertheless, when the chamor dies halfway, if the chamor died halfway, the renter gets some benefit because he can make a profit here halfway. That's the second answer of Tosus. So the nafkamina between the two Teretzim and Tosus would be what happens if indeed the market is at the ultimate destination point, the middle point has no market, and the socher therefore cannot sell his merchandise and make any profit, but on the other hand, he did cut down his expenses of getting from the midpoint till the ultimate destination point. Would that itself be a loan to be mechayev him into may schiris for half the price, half the rental price? And that would depend upon the first teretz, who would say yes, he has to pay. The second teretz would seemingly say no, he would not have to pay. The Gemara now wants to clarify exactly whether the rental agreement here regarding the chamor, the maskir said this chamor, they agreed on specific chamor, or chamor stam. Hechidami, says the Gemara. E di omerle chamor stam. If the maskir agreed to commit himself to any chamor, he didn't specify a particular donkey. It's like when you go to a rental, sometimes they show you the exact car that you're going to rent. Other times they say, look, it'll be this kind of model, and ultimately we'll supply you with one car or another that fits that profile. So if it's a case of chamor stam, then ha'chayv lahamid lo chamor acher, then since the maskir committed himself to any chamor, a chamor, not a specific chamor, not this one. Therefore, in event that this particular chamor is gone, has died, then he has to replace it with a different chamor. The idiomale chamor ze, if on the other hand, the agreement was on this specific chamor, so then even if the chamor died, that doesn't exempt the owner, the maskir, from any sort of obligation. After all, the dead chamor is also worth something. The carcass, the nevela, is worth something. And therefore, yesh bedomel likach yikach, they should really sell the nevela, and with that profit, they should be able to rent a replacement chamor. And therefore, yamshich im hachamor ledarko. And with this replacing chamor that they are able to rent with the dmei hanevela, is that itself would be a fulfillment of the rental agreement from the maskir's point of view. And there's no reason why the socher should get away with paying half the price. He should be paying for the full rental because he now has another chamor, lo tzricha. But the case of Rav, the case of Rav Barfun in the name of Rav, is a case of be she'ein dameha. There's not enough in the nevel likach in order to pay rental for a replacement chamor. So the Gemara now asks, well, if there's not enough money in the value of the nevela to replace the chamor, okay, now there are two options. There's one option called lekicha, and there's one option called schirus. So we suggested a little bit, we were makdim as ama'ucha, we jumped the gun here. Actually, the Gemara till this point was talking about likach, to buy a second chamor. The word likach means a purchase, a lekicha. Now the Gemara is saying, okay, let's say there's not enough money to buy a replacement chamor, but certainly there should be enough money in the carcass to rent another chamor, is yiskar. And in that case, since the maskir specified this particular chamor for the rental agreement, and as a result, the responsibility of the maskir is that if in event that this particular chamor is not available, he's got to find a different chamor. So the Gemara says, no. Rav litaime. What are you telling me? That in order to replace this chamor with a second chamor, you'd have to sell the carcass, which means that in effect the maskir is left with absolutely nothing, no assets whatsoever. He sold it. Or alternatively, he rented it with the value of the carcass, and that rental money is gone. At least in the case where he sold it, there's another chamor to replace the first chamor. But here, in the case where they use the rental fees, they use the carcass to pay for the rental fees for the replacement chamor, then at the end of the rental period, to get the socher to his ultimate goal, there's nothing left of the original chamor. And Rav holds lo machalinan karna, that as far as the maskir is concerned, we're not going to force him into a situation where by virtue of his commitment vis-a-vis the socher, he's going to be left with absolutely nothing. That's called machalya karna. The Karen is completely gone, completely consumed. In other words, if the demand available, the value on the market in the Vela is such that they cannot buy another Chamor so that the Maskir ends up with some Chamor, but rather they're going to have to rent a Chamor, then at the end, the termination of this Schirus, there's nothing left for the Maskir from the Damim of his original Chamor. The original live Chamor is gone, and the carcass has been sold in a way that all its money has been used up. So when the Dmei Nevela, if the value of the Nevela on the market is such that they could purchase another Chamor, that's one thing. And that's what the nature of this agreement is going to obligate. But in a case where there's only enough money in the Nevela to rent another animal, and therefore the mask could be left with nothing. In such a case, that's called machali karna, and we cannot force the maskir into that position. De itmar, we learned hasocher es sachamor umeisalo bachatzia derech omar rav im yesh bedomel likach yikach. If the animal died midway and its carcass is worth enough to purchase a second chamor, that's what's going to be done. But liskar, but if there's only enough money for a rental agreement, al yiskar. Shmuel Omar af liskar yiskar. Shmuel disagrees with Rav, and he's of the opinion that even in a case where the damim of the carcass is worth only enough for a rental agreement, there still is an obligation within the context of the original agreement to replace this chamor with another rented chamor, despite the fact that the maskir will be left with nothing. B'maikamifli, what's the machlokus about? Rav Sovar lo mechalinon karno. Rav says that we don't force the maskir into a situation where he's left with nothing. Because the Nevela now, when it's translated into a rental agreement, the maskir ends up with nothing. Shmuel sov machalin and karna. The commitment of the maskir is such that even if he's left with nothing, he's got a guarantee that the socher gets a donkey to take him to where he has to go. So that at this point, the Gemara is making a distinction between chamor zen and chamor stam. If it was a chamor stam, then there's no question that the maskir has to replace this chamor with another chamor, because the schirus is not limited to any particular chamor. But even in the case of chamor zeh, the Gemara thinks that although he doesn't have to replace this chamor, but whatever value the chamor has, that is meshubad for the schirus, in lieu of the schirus, and for the benefit of the socher, even if it means that the nevela itself, after the chamor dies, is going to be sold on the market to replace this chamor with a different chamor, that's also obligatory within the context of this schirus. But the limit is, says Rav, to lo machar yakana. If there's no way you could replace this chamor by selling the nevela, then rental will not be an option, because that's called machal yikarno. Now, we're about to learn a brisa. Let's just give a little bit of an introduction to the brisa. We're talking about a case of someone who borrows money, and the borrower, meaning the lova, has to give, in this particular case, a mashkon to the malva. And this security that he gives to the malva is an ilan or a sadeh. The malva now, during the period of this mashkon, will take over the ilan or this field. It becomes an izrishus. And as a result of this possession, so to speak, this chazakah, the peros that are produced, the benefits that accrue from this field, now are going to be used as not only a security, it's much beyond that, but rather the peros can now be consumed by the malva. Again, there may be issues of ribis here, but leaving aside the issues of ribis, now again, there are different forms of this kind of a mashkan. There's something called a mishkanta binachaiso, which means that the malva and the lova make up from the get-go that for each year that passes before the lova pays up his chov, there's a set value, X, per year. And that X is going to be subtracted from the loan as if it was paid back. For example, they may make an agreement that the loan will only go down by a minimal nominal fee of one dinar. We're going to subtract one dinar from the chov, even though the sud itself might produce pairs that are worth 1,000 dinarim. That's called mashkanta b'nechaisa. Then there's a mashkanta b'lo nechaisa, which means that the malva eats up the peros of the sud, but there's no deduction whatsoever of the chov, which means that basically, during the period of this halva, the Malva will enjoy the benefits of the fruits of this mashkon, and at the end of this period, he'll receive full payment for the original price, the original loan. Then there's something called a mashkanta desura, and in a mashkanta desura, the nusach is b'mishlam shanya ilin tepuk ara double o kesef, which means that the Malva receives the field and eats his peros, and after such and such an amount of time, whatever amount, number of years they stipulate in the contract, he, the Malva, has to return the sado, the ilan, to the Lova, and the Lova is now free of his loan. In other words, all the peros that the Malva enjoyed and benefited from during this period of time, the sachakol, that becomes a payment of the loan. So now the Braisa is going to be quoted here as a kash on Rav about Loma Chalin and Karna. Meisve, we learned in a Braisa, Misha Lova Mos Michaver. We're talking about a case of someone who borrows and they wrote an agreement called the Mashkanta the Surah, which means that the Malva will eat up the peros during this period of time. Then he returns the Sodeh to the Bailim, and the Bailim, the Lova, doesn't pay any piron at all. So the payers are in lieu of payment for this loan. But what happened was, let's assume the Mashkat Desur was for a 10-year period, 5 years into that agreement, and the loan hasn't yet been repaid. Yave She'ilano Niktatz. The tree just dried up. And now we want to know, what do we do with this tree? You know, maybe you can cut down the tree itself, even though it's not giving fruit, and use it for its firewood. It's worth something on the market. And the Bryce establishes Asurimbo, that no one's allowed to benefit from this Elon. The Lov is not allowed to benefit from the Elon, because for this period of time, based on the Mashkanta, the Surah, the Malve has the right to benefit from the Elon. And if the Lova benefits from the Elon, for example, if he cuts it down and uses its wood as fire, then he's being Mechala Karno Shel Malva. The Malva is not allowed to cut down the tree, because then he's being Mechala Karno Shel Lova. So Ketzad Yasa, what do? They sell the Elon on the market, Yilokach Bo Karka, and with the monies that they benefit from this dried up tree, whatever minimal funds they can get from the market, they purchase another tree, albeit a more humble tree, but that tree will produce fruits. Vehu, and the Malva now could eat Ochel Peros, the Soda, during the balance of the amount of years that are left to this agreement of the Mashkanta de Surah. So the Gemara right away asks the Kashan Rava, Hocha, here in this case that they purchased another Elon to replace the first one, then the seller, Keva de Chimati Yovel Kahadra Ara Lemora, when Yovel comes around, the din of Karkos in Yovel is in the 50th year, the Jubilee year, these Karkos go back to the original owner. So the seller now will reclaim this field. If, again, and we're assuming now at this point in the sugya that the Yovel is going to come in the middle of this period of time that's specified by the Mashkanta de Surah. And in that case, the Lova is not going to get back anything from his Elon. Why? Because the Elon was sold on the market, and the replacement Elon is going to be now taken back by the Mocher at Yovel time. And Vikakalia Karna, it means that the Lova ends up with absolutely nothing. And the Gemara assumes that Rav's principle, again, keep in mind, we may have called it Rabba Baravuna, but it's Rabba Baravuna in the name of Rav. That principle of Lo Machal Yakarna applies any time that a person makes a commitment, whether it's a Schirus commitment or whether it's a Mashkon commitment, in which case that the fruits of the field will be used to pay up this loan. That field, since it still belongs to the Lova, and he has rights to get his Elon back, that's when Rav will activate his principle of lo machal yakarna. So the Gemara answers, Hokamayaskinon. The Gemara says, the Zavin Leilashitin Shnin. The Gemara wants to teach us halacha here in Hilchos Yovel. And what does the halacha establish? that Yovel only applies when, if not for the Yovel, the field was sold litzmitus, meaning for all time. There was no limitation time in the sale, and therefore it's a sale that has to be cut down by Yovel. But here's a case where the field was sold for 60 years, and that Tanai of Zman in the sale obviates or circumvents, if you will, the power of Yovel to be Masa the Soda Lebaila Rishon. Why? The Omer of Chizna, Omer of Ketina, Minayin Lemocher Sadeh L'Shishim Shana Shein Echozeres B'Yovel. How do we know that if the sale exceeded the 50-year mark of Yovel, then Yovel has no power to undermine and revert this kinyan, this sale. Shenemar, because it says in the parasha in Yovel, at the end of the Sefer Vayikra, it says, Va'aretz l'simocher litzmisus. In the parasha of Yovel, it says the land should not be sold open-ended for all time. So in other words, the Torah itself is giving us the reason for the mitzvah of Yovel. The tam of Yovel is that the Aretz lo timocher li'olam. Litzmitus means li'olam. And therefore, in a case, mi she'en shom Yovel nitzmasas, that if not for the power of Yovel, the sale would be endless, would be infinite, then yesham Yovel, then the halacha is that Yovel comes and breaks up this mecher. But yesham Yovel she'ena nitzmeses, in a case where the sale is limited in time, and therefore the mocher will eventually get his field back, is yotzazu. That's not included in the parasha of Yovel. Shafal pisha ein sham Yovel ena nitzmeses. Since even without Yovel, the field, the sale, will be temporary and it will revert back to its original mocher, its original owner. Therefore, there's no power of Yovel in that case. Well, truth is that this doesn't really answer the Gemara's question here, because we're looking for a case of loka machal yakarta. Here it's going to be machal yakarta, albeit after 60 years. That's the Gemara's objection now. Sof, at least we learned a little bit about Yovel here. Sof l'chi matu shitin shanin is kahadra aral amore v'kakal yakarta. I mean, you really haven't, you've just pushed this aside here and set up our question in a different scenario, but the question is still pressing. If this tree is going to be sold, even for a 60-year period, ultimately it will revert back to its original owner because there was a tanai, a limitation in time in this sale. Ella says the Gemara, "Chamay maskinon bizman she'ein hayovel nohei." So if this be the case that we're talking about bizman she'ein hayovel nohei, then the karka will not go back, revert back to the original owner, to the mocher, but rather it will remain in the possession of the kone, and then it's lo machal yikarna. And we drop the question, the objection against Rav, because any monies that accrue by selling the dried up Elon and buying a replacement, that replacement is now owned by the Lover, and there's lo machal yakarna. Hochina mistabra, the Gemara says, I have a logical reason to assume that we're talking about a case where it's ein hayovel noheg, because otherwise it would be asur to do such a thing and sell the Elon if it were machal yakarna, and the lova would end up with nothing. The isal kedaita bizman sheyovel noeg, if the brisa was discussing a period of time in which Yovel was noeg, umachalina karna, and against Rav we would hold like Shmuel, that we don't care about the fact that the replacement Elon that was purchased with the leftover monies that accrued by selling the old Elon, the dried up Elon, that replacement Elon will revert back to the owner in order to guarantee that the Malva will be able to enjoy the benefits of the balance of these years, which are payment, which is benefits that are in lieu of payment of the Chov, is Nitzalche Litzive Venishkale. Why not just allow the Malva to chop down the trees and use them for Sreifa. And if we evaluate that the benefits, the monetary financial benefits for that are equal to what he would have gotten for the balance of this period of time of the Mashkon, then everyone would be happy. The loan was repaid to the Malfe. The Lov is left with nothing, but we're maintaining now that Lo Machal Yikarna. And if that be the case, this option of selling the Ilan She Yovesh and using the monies to buy a replacement, that option is not necessary. Why would the Brice have to push in that direction? Why not just allow the Malva to get the benefits from the Eitzim, from the wood of the Ilan, because Machalin and Karna. Ella, it's rather the best way to say here in this price is that Lo Machalin and Karna. Therefore, we cannot allow the Malva to cut down the tree and burn its wood, because that would be Machalin and Karna. We're looking for another alternative in which we could sell the Ilan and buy a replacement even with those funds. Says the Gemara, no, that's not a good proof. Your Hachinam Mistabra is not convincing. Imishim Ha Lo Kash. If that's your diuk, and you want to prove from that certainly the Brice is talking about a case of Bizman She'ein Ayovel Noeg, and therefore it's Lo Mechalin Inkar. No, I can interpret the Brice as Bizman She'ayovel Noeg, Mechalin Inkar. And now you'll ask me, why is it that we want to buy a replacement Elon with the monies from the first Elon that's being sold? Why not just allow the Malva to cut it down? And the answer is, Zimnin deshalmu shnei mashkanta mekami diyovel. It's very, very possible that the period of time that's stipulated for payment of the loan is less than the yovel. Let's say the yovel is going to come in 15 years from now, and the loan will be completely paid up within 10 years. Why should the Malva have rights to cut down this tree? Inami, another alternative, is the Matule Zuzi Uparikle Arbav Chameshin in Makami Yovel. Maybe at the end of 10 years, even though the Halvo will go beyond Yovel, another 15 years, but nevertheless, the Lova gathered together some liquid assets, some funds, and he's able to pay back the loan before its due date. And in that sense, he circumvents the need to sell his Elon, which means that even if we hold Mechalin and Karna like Shmuel, nevertheless, if there's a possibility of satisfying the Malva without being Mechal and Karna, that's what we want to do. So in this case, where we could sell the field and first sell the Elon and then buy a replacement field or Elon, in that case, everybody is happy. There's Lo Mechalin and Karna. The Lov has a possibility of paying back the loan before the Yovel comes around. Or maybe the terms of the agreement will be that the due date for the loan is before 5 years before, for example, the Yovel. And in such a case, the Lov is a very happy camper because he's left with a replacement Elon. Tana Rabbanan. The Gemara wants to know, in light, in lieu of what we've discussed earlier about Chamor Zeh, Chamor Stam, what would be in the case where the rental agreement was on a particular, instead of a Chamor, in this case it's a ship, and the Socher has rented this ship in order to transport his Yayin, let's say, he's got barrels of wine. Tana Rabbanan, we learned in a Braisa, Socher Sasfina Vitovale. Now, Bechatzi Aderech, halfway towards the destination point, the Sfina went down. You know, it was wrecked in the sea. Rabbi Nosson Omer, Rabbi Nosson gives us a complex verdict or principle that has to apply here. And that is, it all depends. Im Nasan, if the Socher has already paid up the Schiris to the Bala Sfina, even if he paid for the entire rental agreement, every last penny, Lo Yitol, he has no right to get his money back. The Im Lo Nasan, but if on the other hand he hasn't yet paid the Maskir for this Sfina, he hasn't paid a red cent towards the rental agreement, Lo Yitol, he doesn't have to pay anything, even for the first half of the derech. So the Gemara is very confused by this psak, this very complex, odd psak of Rabbi Nosson. Echi Domi, what's the case? Ilem b'sfina zuv v'yayin stam. If the rental agreement was on this particular ship, and any wine, which means that even if this wine is not available because it went down to the bottom of the sea, the socher from his point can demand a sfina for another wine. So why does the psak of Rav Nosson indicate that only if the socher hasn't paid, then he doesn't have to pay? Even if if he already paid, amaylo yito, why shouldn't he get his money back? Because he has a right to say to the maskil, look, we agreed that you would offer me for this, in the context of this rental, the possibility of transporting my goods, and you're not able to live up to your agreement. From my point of view, I'm ready to replace this particular yayin, this merchandise, with other merchandise, and therefore, namely, the socher has the upper hand here in his argument. Havli sfinasa, give me the sfina, and if you don't have that sfina, replace it with the second one. Vana my sinan chavra, and I'll bring my wine in order to transport my wine. In other words, you're the one who's being ma'akiv here. You're preventing the fulfillment of this deal, of this contract. And if you can't fulfill the deal, then give me back my money. Why does Rav Nosson say that if the socher had already paid the money, he can't get his money back? Ella, but rather we're going to have to assume that it's b'sfina stam v'yayin zeh. Then what we're talking about in the case of Yayin Zeh is that the agreement was that these particular barrels of wine would be transported, meaning the owner of the Sfina, the Maskir, has committed himself to transport this wine. And now that this wine is down at the bottom of the sea, im lo nosan amaylo yitain, why does Rav Nosson say that if the socher, the renter, has not yet paid, he doesn't have to pay? Well, in this case, the maskir has a right to say to the socher, look, I'm going to bring you a replacement boat, a ship to replace the first one, but you don't have any wine to transport, because the agreement was that this particular wine that we specified would be transported, and this wine is no longer available. Now, the Ramah in the Torah Choshen Mishpat is quoted as saying that we can derive from this sugya that when a person rents a boat, a ship, for the transportation of something specific, then the renter has no right to replace it with something other than it, even if it's the same weight. But the Ramban and others, the Ran and Ruki Yosef, they disagree with the Yad Ramah, because they say, well, if the weight is equal, then why would the maskir give a hoot which commodities are being transported in his ship? But here, in the case where the maskir has vested interest to say, well, look, our agreement was on this particular yayin, and therefore, if you can't live up to your agreement, you have to pay me the schirus, that's exactly what the maskir has the right to claim. And at this point, we're turning to Daf Ayin Tes Omid Beis. The Gemara says, Neimolei, let the maskir say to the socher, Havli ahu chamra v'ano ma'isin and svinasa. You know, we agreed on this wine, bring this wine, and I'll offer transportation for this wine. I'll bring a replacement ship. So the maskir has the ability to be mekayim his tanai, because the tanai was on sfina stam. The socher, on the other hand, is ma'akiv, because he doesn't have yayin. The yayin is down at the bottom of the sea. So in Marashak, we don't understand the psak of Rabbi Nosson. It doesn't work out in either direction. Now Rav Papa wants to make sense out of Rabbi Nosson. Om Rav Papa, lo mishkachas lei, ela bisfina zu, v'yayin zeh. Which means that neither the maskir nor the socher can live up to their tanai, to their agreement. The maskir can't live up to his agreement because the sfina is not there. And he said he stipulated sfina zu. The socher, from his perspective, cannot live up to his side of the agreement and provide the yayin, the merchandise, for the transportation. Therefore, the principle is, says Rav Nosson, Yad HaTovea Al HaTachton. And as the one who wants to get his money back, he's unfortunately in a position of Amotzi Mechal L'Araya. And therefore, if the socher is already paid up and he wants to get his money back, he can't do so, because the maskir can say to him, well, bring me the wine and I'll transport the wine. I'll bring you a different svina. I'm not the ma'akiv, you are. If, on the other hand, the socher hasn't paid up yet, and now the maskir comes to claim, you know, I want you to pay me the rental fee, the socher, on the other hand, has a right to say to the maskir, well, provide me with the svina. It was svina zoo, and that svina zoo is down at the bottom of the sea. Avo besvina stam, v'yayin stam, what would be in the opposite case, where no one, where both of them can come up with a claim that we could fulfill our condition, my condition. The owner of the svina could say, well, it was svina stam here, I'll get you another replacement svina. The socher said, yayin stam, and I'll give you a replacement merchandise, other wine. Is in that case cholkim, then what would happen would be is if the maskir actually collected the entire sum of rental, he would have to give back half. If, on the other hand, the socher has not yet paid up a penny, he hasn't even begun his payment to the rental, then he would have to pay half. And that's called cholkim. And that's the halacha of yachloku. And basically it means that they both split both the profits and the deficits here, because no one was at fault. You know, the stormy condition was not foreseen and was uncontrollable. Now, at this point, we have a brisa, Tan Rabbanan HaSocher Es HaSfinu Parkala BeChatzi Aderch Nosin Lo Schara Shel Chatzi Aderch V'Einol Av Ela Taromes. This is again a case where a person rented a ship in order to transport his goods. And in this particular case, the Socher took his merchandise off the boat halfway, and he decides that, you know, he's had enough. Does he have to pay for the entire way, the entire distance, which was the original agreement, the full amount? Or can he say, look, I'm going to pay you just half? And in this case, the brisa establishes that he can pay only half. He gets away with paying the whole thing. The Ein Lo Olav Ela Taromes. And the Baal HaSfina only has complaints against the Socher. Why did you back down halfway? You're only paying half the wages. And once again, the Gemara is going to say, Hechidami, what's the case? In Lemedeka, Mashkach Le'agura. If it's a case where the Baal HaSfina can find at that particular place a replacement renter, so that for the balance of the funds, he will rent it to someone else. Amai Islay Taromas. Why should the Baal HaSfina have any complaint and register a Taromas against the Socher, since the Maskir, the owner of the Sfina, doesn't lose anything? Either Loka Mishkach Lagur, if he can't find anyone at this particular point, is Kuli Agra Boy Shlume. Then the Socher should have to pay the full price of the Dmei Schirus, because he committed himself to that price, and the fact that he decides midway that he doesn't want to go any further, that doesn't in any way exempt him from paying the full price. The Gemara says, Li Olam, in truth, the case of the Brisa is Dekam Mishkach La'agura, that the Maskir, the owner of the Sfina, can find someone else to rent the boat. Elamai Islay Taromas, what's his complaint against the Socher? Mishum Rafsasa Disfina. The Sfina will be somewhat damaged here. We call it Misro Es in Hebrew, the Ri'ua, and it starts shaking because it's going to suffer wear and tear when you remove the merchandise and then you replace the merchandise. That's always when the Sfina has to be strongest. And as a result, the Sfina takes a toll on the lifespan of the Sfina, because the first socher is going to have to remove, you know, his merchandise. That's going to shake up the Sfina. Then the replacement renter is going to have to bring in his merchandise. If that's the case, that the Sfina is damaged as a result of the Hotzah and Achnosa here, of the Chalilot, of the Pekaloch, is why is that only Taromis? Is Tanta Ma'al Yisohi? Doesn't in this case the Baal HaSfina have a very good financial claim? Umamona Isle Gabe. He should be able to claim the rental agreement in full price, and it's not just Taromis. The Gemara says, Alamai Proka. What does the Braisa mean when it says Parka Bechatzi Aderech? De Proka Litoane Begave. That he was Porek the Masa Litocha. In other words, midway through the Derech, the Socher added extra weight into the Sfina, but from the get-go, there was an agreement in this rental that the Socher, the renter, could, if he wants, add Chavilos, and he'll pay him whatever the price is per weight. As the Gemara says, if that be the case, my taromos. So again, the Gemara is now reinterpreting this price. So we thought that Parkala means that the Socher takes out his Chavilos. On the contrary, Parka means litoane. He takes out maybe some of the chavilos, but he wants to replace them with other chavilos that are even more weighty, and the ultimate volume is even greater, but he's willing to pay for that. And he had rights to do so within the contract agreement. So my taromis, the Gemara says, that if that be the case, what does the maskir have against the socher? What complaint can he raise? This was all within the framework of the agreement. And the Gemara answers, mishum shinui daite. There's something here called Shini Adas, meaning the Baal HaSfina was under the impression that the Socher would complete his Schirus and the rental would come to a termination within a certain period of time as a result of the fact that now the Socher is busy with taking things out and putting things in. It's going to lengthen the amount of the Schirus, and as a result, the Baal HaSfina does not have his Sfina back, and he doesn't have the ability to rent it to someone else. And therefore the Baal HaSfina has a certain element of taromos. Inami, another possibility and another justification alternatively of why the Baal HaSfina has taromos against the Socher, li ashla yisera, that now he's got to provide stronger ropes because of the extra weight on the boat, and the boat could sink, it goes down into the water, and therefore when it's at the point in which Omeres Lifrok Masa, when they get to the end of the road, and then what we call the Sfas Hanor, then he will have to, as a result of this longer rope, he's going to have to stay at a certain distance from the Sfas HaNohar, because in the Sfas HaNohar the water is very low, and therefore, you know, he's going to have to, in a sense, move the Sfina at a distance from the Sfas HaNohar, and for that, you know, he's going to have to buy extra long chavolim ropes, and since in the middle of the derech the Socher has decided now to add weight, then therefore at this point he's going to have to, at that place wherever it was when the agreement in a sense changed, he, the Baal HaSfina, is going to have to go ahead and buy rope. It's going to cost him a lot of money, and therefore he has taromes. Okay, Rabbosai, we'll stop here.